thanks everyone for coming, and thank you to everyone responsible for my being here. I'll use that kind of catch-all so I don't forget individuals by, you know, breaking it down into individuals. Myself and Mary, I've known Mary for some years now. I was initially her student in, she taught me undergraduate English. And that's been a while since I've been in university. So it's a relationship that reaches back into the dawn of time, as you can tell from the look of me, but fair enough. Okay, I'm going to start out by reading a poem called Chicken Scratches. Oh, I'm sorry. I never did drama, so I never learned how to project properly. I'll try. I'll bear it in mind. This is called Chicken Scratches. Hand-pecked pencil markings in a weak hand, symbols scrawled across bedroom walls in manic crayon, or written 10 foot tall in spray paint on a passageway. Cuneiform entrenched on a baked sheet of clay, elegant cursive pissed in a snowbank. Everything written is doomed to be misunderstood. Now, if you will, your signature here, please. And I'll read a poem. This ran actually in the Gazette, I think on Saturday just passed, so if you read the Gazette, you may have seen it. It's called The Ship, and it's set in a bar in St. John's that's sort of world famous, in St. John's anyway. And I don't know how far it extends beyond that, but it's known as a nexus of artistic activity in that, and you know they're great supporters of writing and music and all that sort of stuff. It's called The Ship. It's based on a true story, and some of it is true. I was in a bar between Duckworth and Water, on my way through a hooting mob of clappers and stompers, a swaying mass of drunk post-teens, when this kid, bespectacled, barely a sliver of bark off a birch rod, pitched suddenly forward as if standing on the deck of a ship in heavy seas. I caught him as he fell, and ducking under an arm, dragged him to the exit like Simon towing Christ's cross down the road. Turns out he'd fallen earlier, lost his footing in a puddle of beer, and struck the edge of a table. Now, 3 drinks later, he was slipping beneath whatever we take to be our conscious lives. No matter, I slung him on the steps across the way and went to ring an ambulance, the kid jerking like a dreaming dog on the hot scent of rabbits, frothing at the mouth now, rabid. When I came back out, Good Samaritan, glad to be of help, he was chatting up a pair of girls, pants piss-stained. I told him about the ambulance. He said, "I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know either. What's wrong with any of us, I mean." I'm going to read the title poem. There's actually kind of 2 title poems. There's a poem called Gift Horse, and then another poem called Gift Horses, just to kind of thematically confuse the issue. But Gift Horse is about, I don't know if you're familiar with the mummering tradition in Newfoundland, but it's not much practice anymore. Mary might correct me. I'm sure there are communities in which it still is. But it was around Christmas time. It's basically people dress up so as to conceal their faces and identities entirely, and they try and conceal their, not conceal, but they alter their voices and, you know, go around to neighbors' houses where you, you know, have a drink and dance and that sort of thing. And the people, the owners of the house, try and guess your identity, right? And it's kind of modern, in what I consider a sort of historic revision. It's generally considered to be, you know, just a bit of a laugh and a lark and that. But I've read a lot of folkloric papers on the subject of it and how, like anything, like any situation in which there's a mask, you know, and your identity is protected, there's this kind of darker underbelly to things. And so some of these papers suggest that maybe, you know, at times it was an opportunity, you know, to right perceived wrongs that you had been done against you, or, you know, you might have had a grudge against your neighbor for Christ, I don't know what, but anyway, you know, and so then you go in and maybe beat up his kitchen kind of thing, and in a fun-filled sort of way. It's all in good fun. Anyway, so the hobby horse was this thing that was built generally with wood maybe and repair board or that sort of thing, and then it has a kind of cloak around it, so the person carrying it is covered by the cloak. Then there's the horse's head, and it has a drawstring that makes the jaw move, and they're quite threatening looking. It's a very long explanation for a rather short poem. Gift horse. There's something to be said for vetting presents. A little tear, a peek inside the wrapping paper. The minor tragedy of Troy, for instance. Taking idols at face value without thinking of the hobby horse. The mouth of screws and nails, wild ropes of hair, the rusty jaw that hinges on a secret, that shuts inside it tots of rum and violence on a dark path leading to a bright kitchen. Actually, that poem, the more I think about it, I was reading Mary's book, Mary Begot, at the time, and I think probably over a debt that I didn't acknowledge in the book, but I will acknowledge it now. This next poem is comes from a great tradition of grocery shopping poems that reaches back at least as far as Homer. It's called Lobsters. We wander aisles, the kid and me, past pans of ice that chill the flesh of fillets, arriving at the lobster tank, where a behemoth with claws the size of children's mittens plods across the floor in segmented centurion's armor, beady eyes the black opacity of glass domes that shield security cameras in department stores, antennae set to channel waves from distant radios or call in airstrikes against a bunkered foe. The small ones form a pep squad pyramid, weigh in against oblivion. My daughter, leaning in, makes a fish face at the lot of them. This next poem I'm going to read is... a lot of this book came out of the fact that I almost died 4 years ago from a bacterial infection of the meninges. I had meningococcal meningitis, which was a very strange experience in that I completely missed out on it because I was feeling fine. And then one night I had a strange headache in the back of my head. And then I was waking up in a hospital bed a week later and having the previous week explained to me by my then girlfriend, now wife, and my parents and my brother, who... when I first woke up, no word of a lie, told me it was the year 2017. And I suppose he thought it was funny. But it was a strange experience for that reason, because it's, you know, for everyone else, it was a horrible thing they went through. And at one point, I think I had a 40% chance of survival. And even then, if I survived, it was the chance that I would have brain or motor neuron damage. And so for them, it was this thing. And for me, it was nothing. It's a gap. I don't, you know, I was in a coma. I don't remember any of it. And so part of this book, anyway, is an attempt to come to terms with it. And in that regard, it's a total failure because I'm still baffled by it. And it's still no more real to me than a story someone else tells you, right? Anyway, this is called The Myth of Orpheus, and it's for my wife, Andrea, who I kind of credit with bringing me back. And I came to in a room with a draft that issued from beneath a swinging door, my head plugged up like a sink stuffed with months of shed hair, shaving stubble, other things that thought to disappear. and the covers were bunched at my waist like a marble effigy of Christ newly sprung from the cross, unveiling an inch of midriff, my navel, which in the hospital light looked like a wound from a hollow point. And the old man in a nearby bed kept dying. The monitor would shriek its air raid warning, and he would die and come back. That was his trick. He did it and did it. The slap, slap of the nurse's soles was deliberate applause. Then he left for good. My wife said that when I was dead, or during my death, she paced the garden with my jacket on, cupping votive flames to cigarettes. She killed each match with a flick of her wrist, then laid the burnt corpses to rest in a packet scored with scratches from matchstick heads that sought to light the way, and did, and died. Tendrils of smoke grew into the sky as vines climbing from tomb-like shade. She stood then and helped me to my feet, led me down the corridor to find a cup of tea, past an orderly who wheeled an assemblage of bed, old woman, and IV, not looking back to see if I was there.